In today's episode, we will hear from Michelle, a nonprofit founder on a mission to support military veterans and their families. Michelle shares about a difficult time in her family's life when her husband struggled with depression after retiring from the Army. Let's hear more about the street she lived on. You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives with your host, Lena LaRue. Together, we will embark on a journey to heal from the wounds of our past and live a life of acceptance, gratitude, and inner freedom. You will hear real stories from people who have found healing and hope after difficult life experiences. We will also discuss topics relating to mental health, physical health, emotional well-being, relationships, self-love, etc. None of the information you hear is meant to replace professional guidance. This podcast is meant for inspirational purposes only, and you are encouraged to seek out professional advice elsewhere. I hope you enjoy the show. So, Michelle, when thinking back to the difficult time in your past that you will be speaking about today, how would you describe that time in just a few words?
Pure desperation.
Let's hear some more about the street she lived on.
So when my husband decided to get out of the military, it wasn't a choice that he wanted to make. He felt it was best for his family. And that was a really, really difficult decision for him. And I took it a little bit more lightly at the time. So I thought that was just going to be one more thing for us to get through, not a big deal. Being a military family, we're used to change, and so it didn't feel like it was going to be a big deal. I mean, it's nothing whenever you're in the military to get orders and say you have to be somewhere in 6 months. And it's like, okay, so I'll just hurry up and just find, you know, a house, do this, this, and this, and we'll figure it out when we get there. Not a big deal, because we were going to be moving back home to Pennsylvania where we had a support system. So it's like, great. This is like what we've wanted, right? To be with family. And we get to Pennsylvania, and I mean, on the outside, like everything is good. He has a job. We have a house. We're together. We live in a really great town. Like, it's cool. And then he just kind of like falls apart.
I realize that for my listeners who are military veterans and active duty service members, it's normal to change your living situation frequently. But for us civilians, it's difficult to imagine a life of constant adaptations. Just imagine being told you have 6 months to move after feeling like you just settled down in your present environment. It's not just about physically packing up your material possessions. It's researching the new place you're going, finding a decent home to rent, getting familiar with the new city once you arrive, where to buy gas, where to do grocery shopping, meeting new neighbors, and trying to make new friends. And this usually happens every couple of years for those in the military. You heard Michelle. Moving from place to place was just a part of military life. It was the norm for her and her family. It wasn't until her husband left the service and they settled down that problems began to surface.
He was grieving his service. Looking back, like that's exactly what it was, is he was like mourning the death of his service. And now he's not anything because he's not a soldier. So it was like a little bit of a crisis. And I totally didn't understand that at all. His identity was wrapped up in being a soldier. And that really deeply affected our life at home. I started noticing like his mood swings, and he needed to see somebody. And so first we went to the VA, and the VA said, no, can't help you. They didn't say, no, we can't help you. Try this. They said, no, we can't help you. And that was like a huge kick in the gut to him, because it was like, I served my country for 8 years and you're telling me that I can't be seen by you. We didn't understand the VA system because he was in the reserves. So he really needed to see like a civilian provider. But at TAPS, when he got out, he was told, you go to the VA. And this is all new to us, right?
If you're a civilian listener like me, you probably have no clue what Michelle was just referring to when she said the term TAPS or VA. In the past 2 years, I have been working closely with veterans and military spouses as a virtual assistant, so I have been exposed to terms like these. But because I know many listeners have little to no familiarity with the military world, I asked Michelle to give a brief summary of what these terms mean and how it applies to her husband's challenging time retiring from the Army.
People in the military, no matter what branch you are, you go through a process that's kind of like a couple week long school to teach you how you should exit the military to go into the civilian world. And it is like drinking from the fire hose does not describe it. Like, you are talked to about so much within a short amount of time, and so much of it is totally irrelevant to you. Like in the Army, it's called SFL TAP, so Soldier for Life Transition Assistance Program. So you're going to spend a couple weeks learning about how to write a resume. Like, when I say weeks, like, you're going to get like an hour class on how to write a resume. You're going to get maybe how to use LinkedIn. How to start your own business takes up a lot of time. People don't want to start their own business. Sure, a lot of veterans do, but like, this is the stuff like, yes, you need to know how to write a resume. Yes, you need to know about this. But never one single time do they ever cover mentally what is going to happen to you when you transition out of the military. And that is the biggest issue. The second issue is that spouses are totally excluded from the conversation. And it's like, I wish I would have been clued in on this, but like, how could I have been? Because the soldiers aren't even clued in on it. When you're in that class, you're then taught, this is how you get enrolled in VA healthcare, Veterans Affairs, which is where veterans can go to receive care if they're enrolled. Like, if you retire and you get out, you go to the Veterans Affairs. And there's some other instances where you can go too. But anyway, that they're like the hub. That's the hub. That is like, if you are a veteran, you talk to the VA, they're going to tell you what to do. That's it. Because if you can't talk to them, who do you go to?
I would be remiss if I didn't dig deeper into this topic of veteran affairs. If you are a civilian with zero ties to the U.S. military, please do not skip over this part. I'm asking you to pay close attention to what I'm about to say because it does actually affect you. Why do I say it affects you? Well, when there is a huge community of people suffering with their mental health, it is going to have an impact on other communities. If mental health is lacking in one group of people, then we all suffer as a collective. All right, so now that I just guilted you into sticking around, let's learn a little bit more about the VA. According to USA.gov, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, aka the VA, runs programs that benefit veterans and members of their families. The VA offers education opportunities and rehabilitation services and provides compensation payments for disabilities or death related to military service, home loan guarantees, pensions, burials, and health care that includes the services of nursing homes, clinics, and medical centers. And according to VA.gov, the VA themselves share their core values, which are described by the acronym ICARE, which stands for Integrity, Commitment, Advocacy, Respect, and Excellence. Sounds like a great program, right? Like a program that's putting veterans first. Well, it's not all sunshine and rainbows over here. There are serious issues with veteran affairs that have been widely reported by those who have sought care. These problems include backlog of disability claims, long wait times or appointments, substandard care and facilities, shortage of mental health services, cancellations without consent. These are just some of the issues that have led to scandals and lawsuits. If you are curious to read about specific stories of failures by Veteran Affairs, I recommend checking out the website Concerned Veterans for America. I will share a link in the episode description where you can access their site. So now you may be wondering, is there any solution to this huge problem? Well, there might be. In May of 2023, a member of the House and a member of the Senate introduced the Veterans Health Care Freedom Act. So, what is this act? To quote the executive director of Concerned Veterans for America, Russ Durstein, the Veterans Health Care Freedom Act would ensure veterans have choice by holding the VA accountable to help them access care rather than act as a bureaucratic barrier. It's simple, he says. Our nation's heroes should have the option to choose the healthcare provider that best meets their needs, even when that means taking their benefits outside of the VA to get that care. It needs to be up to them. This bill would make healthcare choice a reality for veterans rather than an exception. So, if passed, this act has the potential to change veteran healthcare for the better. For my listeners in the USA, I have a small favor to ask. The Concerned Veterans for America website has a form that we can fill out that urges our political officials to pass the Veterans Healthcare Freedom Act. I will be sharing the link to this form in the podcast description. All I ask is that you take 60 seconds to fill it out. I've already filled it out myself. It is extremely easy and super fast. Let's come together to help our veteran family members, friends, and neighbors so they can eventually receive the care they need. Let's work together to build a country where mental health and healthcare overall is a priority for everyone.
So when he went to the VA and they told him, no, we can't help you, it was like, we could have logically figured it out if it wasn't already to that point where things were starting to unravel. As a family, we mentally already were not in a good place. So my next thing to do is I knew how to find a therapist. So I went on psychologytoday.com to look for a therapist because you can filter, you know, by location. It's a really great website and it's a good tool. I found him somebody that he could reach out to. Unfortunately, they had no experience with veterans or military, and it actually made the situation worse because he totally didn't understand. As I said, like on the outside, our life seemed fine and there's no reason for him to be any type of agitated in any type of way. So it made the situation a lot worse. And from then it was just like downhill without the brakes. It all happened so quickly that at the time I had just found out that I was pregnant with our second son. It was like all of a sudden, like the floor went out from underneath me. I remember like being alone, taking a pregnancy test. I was scared. I was scared to tell my husband, and he loves kids. Like he's a great father, but it like our life was just so done. Like I didn't know what the future was going to look like because at that point we were, and I just cannot even express like how quickly once these events happened, I felt like our house collapsed. Like the happiness in our house was gone. We just totally lived as two different people. Like we lived as strangers under the same roof. I did not talk to him. He didn't talk to me. On weekends when he didn't have drill, he stayed in bed. I did everything independently. I would really want to pretend and play family. So like I would make him go to the park with me and my son. And it was just like, man, your life is just a lie. It was a lie. Like I remember I took a picture. I still have it of Christmas morning where he's just like laying there on our living room. Like he hates life. Like he doesn't want to participate in the life that we've made. And trying to deal with that while trying to like pretend that everything's fine for my kid, even though he was, you know, 18 months, 2 years old, they get it. Like they get that. And it was a struggle to not know where to go and what to do. I leaned into church, was like, the only thing to do is to like pray about this because literally, I was out of options. I thought like he was going to come home with divorce papers or I was going to come home and find him unresponsive. That was what I had made peace with. And I was thinking like, how do I where am I going to live when we get divorced? What am I going to do when this happens? Or, you know, at least we have life insurance. Like, I'll be okay for a little bit. And I had to be very, like, sterile and logistical about everything because I couldn't stay in touch with the reality that I was living in. Otherwise, I would have totally fallen apart.
The reason I invited Michelle to speak on the podcast is because I had heard bits and pieces of her story in the past. Michelle hired me to collaborate with her on a social media project. When I learned about the work she does at her nonprofit, I knew I wanted to honor her by sharing her story on the show. Until she came onto the podcast, I was not aware of just how dark this time was for her and her family. When she explained how she was already preparing for a divorce or unexpected death, my heart sank to the floor. They went from being a happy family to having life fall apart. I imagine it wasn't just sad, but probably confusing at how fast everything went downhill.
I ended up putting myself into therapy because the only thing I could do was change myself. That's the only thing I had control over. And I was like, I've got to humble myself and think like, you know, maybe it's me. Maybe I need to make changes for him. And I knew that like his depression was not because of me, but I knew that like I was playing a part in this and I was not supporting him in the best way that he needed to support. And I also totally did not understand this level of depression. So I put myself in therapy. It was so baffling. She helped me understand what he was going through. I often like wish that there was a support group that I could be a part of and like talk to other people who had spouses that were depressed because it's just such a bizarre thing to go through. Like there's no other way to describe it other than like you're not living in the same reality. And I was thinking about this morning too. And it's like when you think of a depressed person, you think of somebody, I would say stereotypically, you think of somebody that is like, shouldn't have a job, like shouldn't be part of society. They can't function. They can't do anything. And it's like, no, my husband went to work. He was a good worker. He was a good employee. He was a good leader. He was great in the reserves. He took command and he did a fantastic job. But at home, when he could fall apart, he did. That's what happens. Like you're not broken whenever you're depressed, but like it is a very nuanced situation. It got to the point where we were able to reach out to his friends and they were kind of like able to relate to him and help him. And then he was able to come to therapy with me. And that was really the turning point. So whenever we were able to sit down in therapy together, the therapist could be like, listen, you're not living in the same reality as her. And this is okay. We're going to get you on track. But like, you guys need to come to an agreement that you can't function like this. So we got him squared away, got our marriage squared away for the most part. And then he deployed for about a year during COVID.
Let's give a shout out to Michelle. She recognized she needed support and reached out to a therapist. She also recognized what was within her power to change. And she was humble and wise to understand that while her husband's depression wasn't her fault, that maybe there was more she could do to support him. This is an area I'm still working on myself as a wife. So I just gotta say, thank you, Michelle. Thank you for being a role model to the rest of us wives out here. Thank goodness Michelle and her husband Chris received the support they needed. I couldn't help but wonder, though, how long this process took. From the time Chris retired until they finally started putting their marriage back together. You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives with Lena LaRue. I really hope that you're enjoying this episode today. If you are, you would be making such a difference to the future of this show by becoming a supporter. There are three simple ways you can do this. Number one, you can leave a review or a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast app or share the podcast with your online friends. 2, you can leave a small donation as small as just $5. And number three, you can purchase an item from my shop that will help you along your healing journey. I currently have a collection of journals that are perfect for those looking to make progress in their daily lives. I will leave links in the description if you would like to support in any one of these ways. Your support makes a difference to the growth of this show. Now, back to today's episode.
So from the time that we left Georgia to the time that it was just like, we're done, probably took about 5 to 6 months because he didn't stay out of the military long. He got out in 2019 and he deployed in 2020. And when he got out of the military, he got out of the Army and then went to Army Reserve. So he never really left a service, but like having to get a civilian job where people don't understand you is just a totally different dynamic. There's a combination of a lot more freedom and sometimes less freedom. And so it's like, that's the mental aspect that should be covered in these workshops at the end of military service. That's not, because it is very different. And what the military does is purposeful programming. So when you go into the military, you are a person. But when you're in the military, you're not a person. You're a soldier. And Marines have it so ingrained in them that like, once a Marine, always a Marine. You're never not a Marine. So they live with that. So it's like when you get out, even if you wanted to get out, like, what are you? Who am I? I have no mission. Mission first, but what is my mission? To understand it even more, you have to understand that a lot of people turn to the military because of maybe neglect or childhood trauma or bad relationships or a lifestyle that they wanted to change or they had no options. I think it's like 25% of the military population active duty are legacy families, meaning the father, the son, the daughter, they served. So why do other people join the military? It's usually to escape something or to fill a void. And that void is filled whenever you go to basic training or you go to ROTC and you're now like, pumped up, you're trauma bonded, you're going through all these terrible experiences that are rewarding at the end with your brothers and sisters. And Chris and I looked at each other the other day, we're like, we're trauma bonded, man. Like, like we have been in it. There's no way. Like, there's no way we're ever leaving each other. And that's like what the military is. It's just like trauma bonding.
If you just listened to Michelle refer to trauma bonding and thought to yourself, what is that? You're not alone. I remember feeling confused the first time I heard this term. Here's a quick definition from my buddy, ChatGPT. Trauma bonding is a strong emotional connection formed between individuals as a result of shared intense experiences, often involving abuse or trauma. It can create a deep bond based on survival, dependency, and a cycle of highs and lows within the relationship. Trauma bonding can occur between any individuals who have experienced trauma together, whether they are both survivors or if one of them is the survivor and the other is the perpetrator. As Michelle points out, many people join the military because they are escaping something. They are lost, for lack of a better term, and they join together with other lost souls to become one unit, working together for a larger cause. When you go through these experiences in the military, a bond is established. In many cases, trauma bonds.
It's for a purpose. That serves a purpose, right? Like you need that programming whenever you're in these firefights or you're in combat and you're trying to perform under pressure. It has to be instinct. So to do that, you kind of have to wipe the slate clean. And that's why they're very strict about rules. That's why they're very strict about a lot of things. So whenever you leave, there's no deprogramming. That's it. It's just like, get a job. People want to hire you because you're a veteran. Good luck. And it's like, that's not true. You need to be marketable. You need to learn about insurance. You need to learn about your 401ks. You need to learn about company culture. You know, there's a lot of different things that you have taken into consideration that are not taken into consideration. And you're also doing this in such a short amount of time. Like, you're making a life-altering decision. Chris did this in about 3 months. And with my nonprofit, I recommend that you start thinking about transitioning 2 years out. So 3 months is like more than what people get. Like, sometimes they're doing this in 6 weeks and they're not thinking about it. They're just like, oh yeah, I'm getting out. You wonder why you crash and burn or you can't manage a budget. You have a void now that you're filling with more alcohol, or, you know, there's so many things. And we do a disservice to our military in that way, because we leave them without purpose or knowing how to seek the purpose that's within them. And it sucks as a spouse watching somebody that you believe in and like, oh gosh, I think the world of Chris. Like, he's so smart. He's so kind. He's amazing. And like, to see him be totally broken because he doesn't have, it's not like he didn't have anything to live for because he had us, but like, he didn't. That's all he ever wanted to do, was to be a soldier. And so it's like, man, we're not enough for you. But nobody is ever really enough for somebody else unless you're enough for yourself. And that's what you have to get to. And that's what we're actively working on now. I mean, mental health is very much a journey. Like, here we are, 2024, and Chris and I are like still talking with a therapist, like still, you know, there's 30 years of relationship gunk that we've got to undo and redo and mold, but you've got to have the tenacity to do it.
It pained me to hear Michelle explain how difficult it was to see the man she loves and admires be lost in a state of brokenness, to live without purpose. I asked Michelle to describe some of the challenges military spouses like her often endure.
It's like you are living in a house, but there's like one room you're not allowed to go into, but you're still responsible for that house and that room, but you can't really do your job because you don't know how to take care of it. You don't even know what's in there. It's like, you know, every once in a while we get a peek behind the curtain and we can see what's going on, but like, we're so in the dark. We only get told what our husbands, just generalizing, what they tell us. So if you don't have good communication, if you have a spouse that is apathetic or that's burnt out or has poor leadership, your marriage is probably going to have more problems than most. Military marriages have a very high rate of divorce. Literally every single day, I'm on two spouse pages, only two. And every single day, there are posts about how to get divorced, what to do. It is not easy. Like, sure, a lot of wives in the world don't really know what their husbands do. Like, you know, your day-to-day life, if you're in the corporate world, if you're, you know, line work, whatever. Like, of course you don't always know, but like, they're not always controlling every single aspect of your life either. When you sign up to be in the military, you don't get time off. You're never not a soldier or an airman or whatever. Like, so if there's not a good line of communication, what do you do? Like, you just have to be so comfortable with being in the dark about your life, wondering where you're going to go next. It's pretty wild to think about, to be honest. Like, you just roll with it. I was talking to my friends the other day who are civilians, and they were like, wow, you have a lot of stress. I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess we do, but this is just like normal. And they're like, how do you sleep at night? And I'm like, well, my husband tells me we're, you know, this thing happened in the world, and then we go to bed. Like, and they're like, how do you deal with that? And I'm just like, this is not even a second thought. Like, military families are like, tell me when there's something big happening. Like, oh, you're packing your bag? Okay, I guess you're leaving. It is such a different level of just functioning. And if you don't have that trust in your marriage, and that level of communication, then like you're in trouble. A lot of soldiers, a lot of people in the military, they might have a hard time communicating with their spouses due to their stuff before the military or due to their leadership, just treating them like dogs. That stuff trickles down the family. And then from the family, that stuff spits back out and they perform poorly at work or they're jerks to their coworkers or whatever. It's like everything is a cycle. And I say often that family is the bedrock of society. How a family functions and how strong a family is directly impacts society. And we as a military has gotten better at thinking about families, but not quite to that level yet. Like the joke is, if the military wanted you to have a spouse, they would have issued you one. So it's like, that's so true. So like, for example, Chris will come home and he'll be like, hey, I just got orders. We're moving to Fort Benning in, 7 months. Oh, okay. So now that's on me to figure out what schools I'm going to put my kids in, houses near those schools, where the grocery stores are, changing pediatricians. Is this neighborhood safe? When can I fly down to see the house? Am I even going to get to see a house? Because a lot of people do sight unseen. You know, arranging childcare, like there's so much that goes into it that's totally on the spouse's plate because they are too busy getting their orders on their side, ready to go, getting everything. Like it has to be a well-oiled machine. And it's something that a lot of people, they just fall into the rhythm of that because that's what you have to do. But that's like the invisible load that like women in general carry. But then whenever you're part of a like an institution like that, it is like super burdensome. It is a lot for people to constantly go through. I counted, Chris and I have moved. We've been together about 9 years and we've lived in 8 different houses. It's a lot.
Yes, that is a lot. It's hard to fathom how military families move around on such a frequent basis.
You know, you just get used to it. And sometimes I think when we have that stability, am I going to hate it? I'm scared to have stability because this house that we live in now is so far the longest place that we've lived in 9 years. And it's like, do we want to keep working on this house? Do we want to keep doing this? When is the other shoe going to drop? So it's like, that's how we feel like we're living is like, when is that other shoe going to drop? And so you're always in like this state of suspense. It's like an undercurrent of nerves and emotions. And it does dysregulate your nervous system. And that's where Chris and I have to be really good at being in tune with ourselves and each other and talk through things. And we are finally doing a much better job of that. It's not perfect, but like even like right before I came up here to do this podcast, like he was having a rough day. I'm having a rough day. You know, I've been up really late working on veteran help point stuff. And he's like, you know, got his own stuff going on. He had to jump on work this morning and last night too. And he was getting really snappy. Previously, I would have been like, listen. But working through all of that, I could come from a place of peace because that's what was needed at the moment and be like, hey, I know that you don't want to be like this. I see that you're struggling. I know that I'm struggling too. Let's make a promise to each other that we can regroup and get it back together because we want to have fun with the kids and this is not like the life that we want to cultivate right now. He's like, yeah, absolutely. I don't feel good about this. I took a break with the kids. We regrouped. I'm like, good, cool. I got stuff to do. We'll talk about this later. And it was good. But like 5 years ago, that would not have been a productive conversation because we wouldn't have understood ourselves as individuals, like how to receive that if one of us were even at that place. Do you know what I mean? Because like this lifestyle has you going so fast. So if you don't take the time to be intentional with your mental health and like regulating your nervous system, which everyone in the military should know how to regulate their nervous system or have tools, because you, it doesn't matter if you ever deployed, you're going to get out of whack somehow. Like, that's a whole other thing, but it's not taught and it's not brought up. And it's like, this is the one population where you really want to teach them how they can regulate their nervous system and go back to a state of calm.
I was impressed when Michelle shared that example of how quickly she and Chris were able to go from tension and overwhelm to understanding and patience. As she says, they are still working on their marriage, but it's obvious they have made a lot of progress. I asked her how they were able to cultivate the healthy marriage they have now.
Extreme personal development. I have just like made it my mission to really figure out who I am as a person, not a mom, not anything else, just who is Michelle. And I didn't care how that fit in to anybody else's life but my own. And I had the full support of my husband to do that. So it's like, it doesn't matter because he's going to love me no matter what. And then he's done the same. So like, he just works very hard on himself. He's always learning. He's always trying to grow. And then one of the resources on my database I use, so we have like a therapist that works with both of us in real time. So like, if we're in a tiff, we can go and talk to her. She'll listen to both of us. So that has been eye-opening, because sometimes like whenever you're in a relationship, you have trouble communicating to somebody else, whether like you're afraid of how they're going to receive that, or your communication styles are totally different. So her giving us the tools to figure out how to reconnect, especially after kids, whenever they take up all your time, like he's in the military, we have 3 kids, I have a business. It's like, where do we have time to even like, I always say like, we're like 2 ships in the night a lot of weeks, but really like she's shown us that it just takes 5 minutes of intentional connection to kind of nourish each other and that relationship.
Michelle's focus on her own healing is encouraging. She's showing herself, her husband, and her children that her mental health is a priority. What's even more admirable is that she is taking her passion for mental health and sharing it with others. Michelle is the founder of Veteran Help Point, a nonprofit dedicated to connecting rural veterans to local resources and a community of fellow veterans. Let's hear some more about the amazing work they do.
Yeah, so I run Veteran Help Point. I started that in November of 2021 after we struggled to find the help that he needed. I probably wouldn't have started this, honestly, if not only did that happen, but at the same time, I was also helping our neighbor who was a Vietnam veteran. He was about to be evicted from his house, so he didn't know where to go. His family didn't know where to turn to. His church didn't even know where to put him. So we were able to get him into the appropriate housing and figure that out. And Chris and I were able to navigate it. But it made me realize that there is no intuitive database where people can just like pull up and look. There are databases out there, but they're very much like, it's just too much. It's so overwhelming. It's not organized. It's an afterthought. So we are focusing on small communities, rural areas that don't have a lot of veteran resources, they think. And showing these rural veterans that there are resources there that can help them. They're just, you know, hidden. And we're bringing them to life in our database. We have virtual resources. And we have 9 categories of help. So it's like primary care, mental health, fitness and community, job assistance, da-da-da. So all these things. And looking at the wellness of a veteran and their family very holistically. Because when one area of somebody's life is struggling, it creates a domino effect. So like, yeah, you might be out of a job, but like, why did you lose your job? Is it because your mental health is suffering? And so often it's because people didn't deal with their transition well. So I try to catch people before they leave the military, get them to the right resources that they need. And the other big thing I try to do is normalize seeking support. So It doesn't have to be therapy. It could be a mentorship. It could be holistic wellness like yoga or breath work or something like that. But anything to get you to tap into yourself and figure out who you are before you leave the military. So that way you can set yourself up for success and be somebody that your family can depend on. And so how can you do that if you're falling apart and you don't know why?
It's amazing to see folks like Michelle and Chris, a family who suffered due to lack of resources, turn things around for the better in their marriage. What's even more amazing is that they have decided to affect change in the lives of others by creating a nonprofit that finds and shares resources so other military families don't have to live in pure desperation like they did. Speaking of pure desperation, those are the words Michelle used to describe that challenging, dark time in her life. As we've learned, life has improved for Michelle and her family since then. I asked Michelle to describe her current life in just a few words. This is what she said.
Vibrant chaos. It's not bad, but it is that life is chaos with three kids, but it is like our house is so full. And I can appreciate my kids as individuals now because of what Chris and I had to go through, causing me to do the work and him to do the work. We are better parents because of it. And it is just like we have a lot more fun in life. It's a very vibrant household.
How poetic is that? Vibrant chaos. I don't have to say this because it's obvious to us all, but life is difficult. It's chaotic. With that said, there are always things within our control that we can change, even amid the chaos. We can be like Michelle and decide to get help. Speaking of getting help, Michelle had a few final words of encouragement she wanted to share with us. And this advice applies to all of us, whether you are a civilian like me or part of the military community like her.
I am very passionate about people taking the first steps and being brave enough to not even seek help, but just like support, because you cannot, as human beings, we are not meant to do life alone. We are communal animals. We are meant to live in tribes. And I like to teach people how to build their own tribe, whether it's virtual or in person, and just empower you to do that because it's tough and it's unnecessary to do life alone.
There's something so powerful about what Michelle just said about not doing life alone and why it's vital to our survival as humans to be in community. The important thing to remember here is that the community should be healthy, a supportive group dedicated to the well-being of the individuals. Because like Michelle pointed out earlier, it's essential that we know ourselves on an individual level. Taking that into consideration, I think the goal for each of us is this: to establish a healthy identity by working to understand who we are individually, while also actively seeking a community of other healthy individuals who can come together to uplift, encourage, and guide one another. It's not about you becoming the community. It's about you becoming a better version of yourself within the community. If you resonate with Michelle's story in any way, or you would like more information about her nonprofit, I encourage you to reach out to her. I will be sharing her contact information in the episode description. While I found myself enlightened and empowered by many things Michelle said in this conversation, a key takeaway I would like to share is this. Even though we may feel absolutely desperate to support our loved ones and help them change their circumstances, oftentimes the only way we can do that is by first changing within ourselves. Michelle felt desperate and deserted, seeing her once delightful husband become depressed, distant, and disconnected. She recognized what was within her control and recognized that she herself needed to change. By shifting her focus from her husband to herself, she empowered herself to take action and search for help on her healing journey. it's not easy to admit that you might need help to change your circumstances, but it is worth it in the long run. Are you ready to seek help? This is Lena LaRue. I'll see you on the streets. You just listened to an episode of The Streets of Our Lives. This is Lena LaRue, the host and producer. I hope that you were encouraged and inspired by this episode. If you were, please help others find the podcast by subscribing, sharing, or leaving a rating on the show. Please feel free to reach out to me with any comments, questions, or suggestions for upcoming episodes. If you'd like to monetarily support the show, you can find a link to make a donation in the description of the episode. Thank you so much for your support. See you next time.